I'm Afshin Ratansi and welcome to Going Underground, broadcasting all around the world from the heart of the Middle East. 26 years ago today, NATO launched its illegal bombing campaign on Yugoslavia, bypassing the UN and cementing a playbook for illegal wars waged across the world in the name of democracy. And now, US President Donald Trump, albeit seeking peace in Europe, has restarted Biden proxy wars in West Asia with billions of dollars of US public money. What happened to make America great again? Even leading indicators of capitalism like the S&P 500 have been falling, let alone Trump's tortoise-like adoption of cryptocurrency that might free the U.S. economy from oligarch manipulation. Joining me now from Hartford, Connecticut, is Jeffrey Tucker, founder and president of the Brownstone Institute. Jeffrey, thanks so much for coming on. I'm sure we both applaud Trump's decision to support diplomacy in Europe, even if European elites are not so into it. But what's your perspective on why on earth he seems to be relaunching wars, Biden wars in the Middle East? You know, people are calling it MAGA is actually Miriam Adelson gets all, not make America great again. What's your perspective?
I wish I had an answer to that. I think what we're seeing is a gradual unraveling of the U.S. empire, which is made necessary because we can't afford to fund every war in the world or provide security and arms exports for the planet Earth. And it's finally come to an end. You know, it began just after the post-war period, and now it's lasted all this time. And so that's the direction we're going. And but Trump faces a ferocious military-industrial complex, obviously, that's very hungry for tax dollars all the time. So controlling the generals, controlling the military, controlling the arms manufacturers and all of the vast networks in Washington that are making money off the U.S. empire is not the easiest thing in the world. One of the things that's a little bit awkward about the way the U.S. works is that we have a president, but it's never entirely clear just how much power that president does. Indeed, we've seen his power challenged, even over his authority over executive agencies. Right now, judges are telling him he can't do this, he can't do this, he can't do that. So it's a little bit murky and a little unclear.
Yeah, I'll get on to his personal safety in the face of what he wants to do in a moment. But so are you implying this is sort of quid pro quo? OK, you can have peace in Europe and a drawdown on that war as long as you support Netanyahu and do all of that. I mean, does he not realize his whole presidency will unravel and all the great things he might do with peace in Europe, with the infrastructural spending in the United States or whatever? They'll all be undone if he goes to war with Iran.
I think he must know that, and he doesn't want that. That's why he sloganizes all the time about peace in general. You notice he doesn't say, I want peace here, but war there, war there. He wants to prioritize peace above everything else. So, but he's faced, you know, he's boxed in a number of areas, and I have to believe that he's sincerely interested in unraveling the U.S. empire. As you say, there's no chance of making America great so long as this empire is thriving. And he's not a stupid man. He's very aware of that. So some people say he's playing 40 chess, as you know. I don't know. It's a tough spot to be in, and it's the late imperial stage of an empire of the U.S. sort is an uncomfortable and confusing situation to be in.
And a very dangerous one, clearly. I mean, Gore Vidal famously said that reforming the healthcare system would lead to any president being killed or certainly defamed in grotesque terms. How worried are you that Trump appears to think he can just, appoint RFK, let alone all the wars, he can appoint RFK Jr. to just wander in there and start reforming decades-old oligarch power in big pharma and big agriculture. And, they got a popular mandate, the Trump administration, no worries, it'll all happen.
Yeah, I'm afraid that many supporters of Trump are very naive about this, too. I mean, we've got, a few dozen people in place battling age-old institutions with millions of employees and countless trillions of dollars at stake. So it's an uphill battle, to say the least. It's not clear how much power RFK really has, or Tulsi Gabbard, or the rest of them. They're hemmed in and boxed in every day. I don't envy their lives. And I tell you this, I because I know some of these people, they're not doing it for reasons of career or money. They're doing it because they love their country. And they're making enormous sacrifices to make it happen. And my worry is, too, that if it can't happen under Trump, what are the conditions under which it does happen? That's what's worrying about it.
I'll get on to a second violent revolution in the U.S. in a second then. But why is it, for instance, that belatedly Trump on Truth Social said that the pardons Biden disgracefully issued as he was leaving office were not real pardons because they were signed by AutoPen. But he doesn't seem to have gone after all the people that tried to destroy him and annihilate him. Perhaps he's too busy, but does he not realize that if he doesn't get these people punished and if there's not some justice meted out, his successors, let alone him, will suffer the same fate? I mean, all the Russiagate hoaxes, they're still out there. He mentions James Comey, but James Comey, as far as I understand it, is living happily enough in a suburb of, I don't know, Maryland? I don't know where he lives.
Yeah, I understand. And I, too, wonder, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing this? But again, I Washington as a town is a strange place. And there's a public narrative that you read on the press. And then there's the whispers and the weird clandestine classified world of Washington. And that's the side that everybody's interested in, but it never quite leaks out into the normal conversation. What happened with the release of the JFK files is very interesting because Trump, had said in the campaign he's going to release the files, and then he issued an executive order calling for them to be released, but they kept not being released. And he finally just went to the John F. Kennedy Performing Arts Center and announced that they'd be released. And that sent all of national security state into a complete panic. And so they did this huge file dump just on order of the president. They weren't prepared. They hadn't organized the documents. There's a lot of documents in there that they did not want released. People are digging through them now, and it's probably the most explicit about the CIA and its global connections and its cutouts and its outposts to have ever been released. And it was done, it was just forced upon the DC establishment. So, and people are still digging through them, figuring out what's what. But this is what we've come to, where the president has to hold a big public news conference and announce the documents are coming out, and then everybody does an all-nighter, and then does his document dumps. I mean, that's sort of what we're faced with. Washington does not want to change. It does not want transparency. It does not want openness. And Trump does, at least on a lot of things. So he's having to force his way through, like a bull in a china shop, really.
Yeah, the redactions on previous documents were also taken away, and so we could see Israel was in it and so on, which can't please Miriam Adelson. I mean, how far do you think Israel is behind schemes against him, let alone what you just said, which is he has to, which is that basically yet again his executive orders are being deliberately disobeyed until he calls news conferences.
Yeah, I have no idea about how to weigh all the various interests, and there are many, and they involve trillions of dollars, and I don't know what the calculations are that the Trump administration is using, and I don't know if it's going to work, but I do know the goal is to unravel the U.S. empire in all all parts of the world in 4 years. So, but, you know, it was interesting because pretty much the day that he seemed to be on the verge of negotiating this peace in Ukraine, you know, that very day, suddenly the military is bombing, you know, the Houthis in Yemen. So, you know, there's an appetite for war in Washington, and they have to keep it going somewhere all the time. And it's not clear to what extent the commander-in-chief is really the commander-in-chief.
And what happens to him if he doesn't go through this line of, okay, I'll have peace here, but in return for that, I'll have to bomb starving people in one of the poorest countries in the world here. What happens to a president? I mean, are you frightened for his safety? I mean, I'll get on to the healthcare reform.
Well, I don't, you know, I mean, like you have, yes, I am, of course. I mean, there have been 3 assassination attempts on him, you know, already before he took office. So yeah, there's a great danger of safety. And there's a reason why the JFK documents were delivered as a way of saying, you know, a president can be killed by a conspiracy of deep state interests. And I think that that's the upshot of these documents, as best we can tell so far. The CIA was definitely involved. I think that's the bottom line. It's not that anybody really had any doubt about that, really, unless you're just accepting the Warren Commission, you know, for what it is or whatever. But I think most any honest observer has long thought the CIA had some hand in it. So it's a way of sending a message, you know, that he's in danger. I mean, you look at what's happened to Elon Musk. I mean, he and the Department of Government Efficiency went into the Treasury Department and got some access to the payment portals, and discovered $4.7 trillion was leaving the government without any clear indication of congressional mandate for it. And they've tried to re-tag things and bring normal standards of accounting. But as a result of that action, federal judges have restricted access, and now his companies are under fire. They're even burning Teslas all over the country. So he's been subjected to, you know, a form of essentially domestic terrorism. So all these people are in grave danger, I would say.
Jeffrey Tucker, I'll stop you there. More from the founder and president of the Brownstone Institute after this break. Welcome back to Going Underground. I'm still here with the founder and president of the Brownstone Institute, Jeffrey Tucker. Jeffrey, in part one, you were talking about the threats to Elon Musk. I understand he has a better security detail, perhaps, hopefully, than even the president. Do you find, as a student of power and the way power works, do you find it a bit odd that it is oligarchs like Musk that have to be relied on to tear apart and destroy oligarch monopoly power and corruption from within the government and not actually the masses in some way?
Well, I, you know, I've had friends of mine complain about this, that, you know, he's up to no good and that sort of thing. But I don't know what other person that Trump would have tapped to get hold of the essential spending mechanisms of the U.S. He seems like the most likely candidate after his experience at Twitter and after his public profile. And he seemed like the best one for the job. I don't know who else he could have appointed that would have been ferocious enough and compelling enough to have done that job. So I think Trump chose him for that reason, because he has a proven record and he respects him, and that's it.
Yet Musk arguably is not going, I mean, he's made deals with Israel, Netanyahu again, but he also is not saying the things he was saying before Doge when it comes to the monopoly Silicon Valley companies. I don't know whether he's slightly hamstrung because he is an oligarch in that way. I mean, presumably the Brownstone Institute, where you've been, has firsthand experience of the kind of censorship industrial complex that has blighted the United States and actually the whole world with censorship for so many years before this new term of Trump's.
Well, yeah, and you have to remember that Musk was the guy who broke that censorship by buying Twitter, paid way too much for it. I think it was like $48 billion, something absurd, and then turned it into a free speech platform, at least relatively free in the U.S., consistent with U.S. law, and it tries to adhere to the laws around the world. So it's less free in other places of the world than it is in the U.S. But that broke the media monopoly, and it is now the number one app in the world, and it's because people don't like censored platforms. They like true things coming out. So he played a really, really important and heroic role in all this. I mean, most of what we know today, we know because of the platform X, and without it, I don't know where we would be, really.
So, yeah, but sorry, Jeffrey, again, no repercussions for Zuckerberg, who's suddenly brought into the camp when he suddenly says, oh, I like Trump now. No repercussions for Microsoft, for Google. I mean, what's your opinion? Do you think there should be repercussions for these companies?
Yeah, well, there should be, but there won't be. I mean, it's sort of the way it works. You know, Zuckerberg changed because he saw power in Washington change, and he changed along with it. And you could say the same thing for the one-time Amazon CEO who now owns the Washington
Jeff Bezos.
They've all changed. But still, the platforms are heavily censored. I mean, LinkedIn and YouTube and Google, they're all still up to their censored ways. It's just they're not being forced to do it now by government, so far as we know. But it's all written into the algorithms. So we're in this awkward situations where we have legacy institutions like Google and Microsoft and all the major networks are heavily censored. And then you have these new institutions like X and Substack and these other places that are uncensored. I'm sure this interview could never appear on YouTube, for example. You know, so that's sort of where we are. We're in this transition period. But importantly, the legacy institutions have been discredited largely in the public mind. People just simply don't trust them. And they trust, you know, Elon's platforms and free speech platforms much more. So we're in this strange and difficult period of transition from one way of doing things to another way entirely. And a lot of people are resisting it. You know, I mean, that's the reason for the bombings of the Teslas and the attack on Elon's stock price and so on. It's a ferocious battle being waged in the U.S. over the future of freedom itself.
Yeah, except Google, YouTube has better tech, arguably. So it also has huge government contracts. Google does. I mean, in a sense, these companies are government agencies, quasi-government agencies. Yeah. So should we be expecting them to adhere to constitutional First Amendment rules anytime soon?
You make a good point. And I've written this several times, under capitalism, the idea is that the customer is always right. Well, what happens when your main customer, or at least a major customer, is the government itself? Then the government is always right. You know that, and that seems to be the way Amazon and Google and Microsoft work, as they're basically these corporatist, statist institutions. That's something I did not know 5 years ago. So all this stuff is new information to me. We've all kind of learned and discovered things about our own government and corporatist structure that we didn't know before.
Well, let's go on to one other element of finance I know you're interested in. Are you disappointed about how slow the task force on cryptocurrency has been? Clearly, cryptocurrency has been useful for avoiding sanctions, which has been so much a weapon of destruction wielded by the United States for so many years. It's used for all over the global south. They're tentative steps, but no real decision by this sovereign wealth fund policy to actually buy crypto and so on.
Well, yeah, and that's probably good. I don't favor government getting in the cryptocurrency business. But what I think Trump is trying to do is call an end to the war on crypto, which actually dates back to 2013. Like as soon as crypto started making some degree of inroads, the U.S. Treasury Department came after it and started regulating it and taxing it and controlling the on-ramps and off-ramps. And a lot of people have gone to jail. A lot of people have been fined. A lot of people have been harassed within an inch of their life just for engaging in crypto innovation. So I think Trump is trying to put a stop to that. And that's the reason for the summit. It was just an attempt to signal that we're going to be crypto tolerant now. And we're going to allow this kind of innovation to take place. I think that's the upshot of what's taking place. And that's a very good sign.
Do you just think the propaganda will fade away? Because the only reason for the Treasury owning crypto would arguably be to inspire confidence after these years of propaganda against crypto, mm-hmm. so that the wider public would feel this isn't some pyramid scheme or, you know, the kind of propaganda that was disseminated over the past few years.
Yeah, I think that is probably the purpose. I mean, and my preference would be for the government to do nothing, right? I mean, just like hands off completely.
You're a Hayekian, self-confessed.
Yeah. But that apparently is not a realistic option these days. So everything is either mandatory or forbidden.
I mean,
anyway, I think that what Trump's trying to do with this crypto summit and the sovereign wealth fund and the idea of, you know, using, by the way, the existing U.S. government stash of Bitcoin and crypto is all stolen money. I mean, it's all stuff that was taken from people before. So, I mean, it's not clear that it really belongs to the U.S. government, but they're acting as if it does. So, I mean, that's kind of strange. But yeah, he wants to develop a sovereign crypto fund. I'm glad that they're not in the markets buying right now, but whether and to what extent all of this stuff can be reversed by a future president is a top worry, which speaks to a larger problem, really, which is that the Trump administration, God willing, has 4 years, and they have already run into so many barriers. It's incredible. I mean, there was something like, I think last count was over 160 lawsuits against these executive orders that have already been passed. And you've got federal judges requiring Trump to spend money that they don't want to spend. I mean, how does that make any sense, really? They say it's division of powers, but all these agencies like USAID live under the banner of the executive department. So if the chief executive's not in charge of them, you know, it's a question, well, who is, you know? And so this has to be litigated and decided by the Supreme Court at some point. Something's got to give. We just can't keep going on like this.
And you know how that story will be covered by so-called corporate mainstream media in your country, Jeff Bezos's Washington Post and so on. But thankfully, as you said, we have X, there's Rumble, there's free speech platforms. What did you feel when you saw J.D. Vance, the vice president, lecturing Western European elites at the Munich Security Forum about the fact there was no free speech? I should say that Rumble is banned in France, and obviously Fox News is banned from broadcast in Britain and de facto, yeah, and so on. What did it make you feel? And do you think the publics of Western Europe were happy while the elites were... I know the elites were absolutely horrified.
They were horrified. I don't know. You know, I mean, opinions and public opinion in Europe is something I don't really have access to. But if it's anything like the U.S., you've got this vast gap that separates the common people's opinions of the elites and the elites' opinions of themselves. So Vance and Trump are trying to speak for the average person. I mean, they call it populism. I don't know. I think another word might just be democracy, you know, but people really do want their governments back, and they want their systems of government back. And you've got a whole elite that doesn't want to give it to them. And that's true in the U.S. And it is probably true in most places of the world. You know, and I started Brownstone Institute as a response to the COVID lockdowns. But you know, the global populist movement was really fired up as a consequence of those lockdowns, because that's what sort of revealed to the world's population what the designs of the ruling class really are for their lives, economically, culturally, socially, and politically. And so that revolution that once came to the Soviet Union all those years ago is now coming to the industrialized, allegedly democratic West, too.
Just finally, running out of time, you were so quick, as you say, to distrust all the COVID advice. What advice would you give to people who blindly did believe the advice, and how can they learn from that experience now? Obviously, the people who are ill would...
I don't know.
How should
people
learn from their mistake in believing authority when the advice was given?
Yeah, it's a tough problem because people were scared and they went along and now they feel like idiots, and it's hard to deal with when you've gone through something like that psychologically. What you did to your family, what you did to your community, what happened to your business, what happened to yourself. What you did to your children, you know, it's psychologically a difficult thing. But I'm part of the job of Brownstone Institute is to continue this discussion, to continue this research, keep this topic alive, so that it can't be buried by the ruling class that did all this stuff to us and pretend like, oh, mistakes were made. And that's what the New York Times is now saying. Oh, sorry, we made some mistakes. Let's move on. Forget about it. You know, but there will be no forgetting if we have anything to do with it.
Jeffrey Tucker, thank you.
My pleasure.
That's it for the show. We'll be back on Saturday with a brand new episode. Until then, keep in touch via all our social media if it's not censored in your country. And head to our channel, Going Underground TV on Rumble.com, to watch new and old episodes of Going Underground. See you Saturday.